Hello and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Christian Knapp. This is Selling the Mountains, a show about the booming mountain town real estate economy and unique personalities fueling it. Each episode is an insider's perspective on market trends, lifestyle, success stories, and the ups and downs of home ownership in the mountains.
Christian Knapp is the former chief marketing officer of Aspen Skiing Company and a lifelong mountain town enthusiast. He is an accomplished marketing and sales leader who has worked for the top resorts in North America, including Aspen, Vail, Breckenridge, and Keystone. Currently, Christian is an independent consultant and principal at Moment of Truth, a boutique marketing firm specializing in brand development, strategic planning, and digital execution. All opinions expressed by Christian and podcast guests are solely their own and do not reflect the opinions of the companies or clients they represent. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for real estate investment decisions.
My guest today is Mandy Welgos. Mandy is an up-and-coming Aspen broker who loves what she does while balancing the demands of being a working mom. Using dynamic market knowledge and progressive marketing strategies, Mandy advocates for discriminating buyers, sellers, and investors. Her clients depend on her to provide an intimate inside track to the competitive world of Aspen real estate, and she has the habit of making the impossible possible. In our conversation, we discuss being true to who you are and how to stay top of mind in a crowded environment. How finding a focus or cause that personally resonates and allows you to give back to the community while networking with like-minded people can be both rewarding and a great business development tool. Lastly, we talked about balancing family life as a working mom and the innate ability of a busy person to always get things done. I hope you enjoy this great conversation with Mandy. This episode is sponsored by SH Building Group. The experienced team of professionals at SH Build consists of client, site, accounting, subcontractor, design, and craft building specialists. They integrate the latest construction management technology and offer home guardianship services and advanced inspections. Tom Sherlock and his team helped remodel my home, and their attention to detail was unsurpassed. Start planning a project today. Visit shbuilt.com or call 970-923-1122 and tell them you heard about them on Selling the Mountains.
Born and raised in Ohio, a small town in Ohio, I went to Boston College after high school and moved out to Denver with three of my childhood girlfriends, who I'm still, they're like my soul sisters still. Was in Denver for about 5 years working at an ad agency and marketing agency for Coors Brewing Company, which was really fun. And then met my husband at a reggae concert at Red Rocks and moved up to Aspen shortly after that. I worked, my first job in Aspen was with a company called Blue Green, which is a landscape architecture firm, doing marketing for them, which in hindsight taught me quite a bit about real estate, kind of. And then I worked for RJ Gallagher for about 5 years, learning all about real estate development, fractional interests, marketing, sales, project management. And in that time, I never got my real estate license, but we talked about doing that, but I never did. And then I had three babies in 5 years, took a little breather from work, and then jumped back in and have had my license for 2 years now.
That is awesome. Before we dive into your path there and how you got to where you are, concert at Red Rocks is where you met your husband. That's pretty awesome.
I know. We need to get back there. Reggae on the rocks.
No, I mean, for anyone who's listening or hasn't been to Red Rocks, you got to put it on your list.
Oh, it's awesome.
One of the best venues on the planet to see a show.
It really is.
I don't think you can call yourself a Coloradan until you've seen a show at Red Rocks.
It's very true.
So jumping forward, RJ Gallagher is a developer, you know, marketer of a lot of different developments. So you worked for him for a while. And what lessons did you learn from him?
I really learned about kind of differentiating yourself and your project from other people. He's really, really good and talented at copywriting and hooking people and, you know, catching your attention. I think that's really important, no matter if you're just a broker and building your own brand or a project or development. I think that was really eye-opening for me with him.
So you made the pivot into real estate, got your license, and are currently working with Aspen Snowmass Sotheby's. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And at what point did you decide, you know, this is it, I'm moving into real estate?
So a very, very close friend and wonderful human being, Dana Horton, is, I've known her for 15 years. We kind of always dabbled and talked about partnering with each other in real estate. And then she said, you know, I had this opportunity to meet with my in-laws, my husband's parents, to sell their house that they've owned here in Aspen for about 30 years. And I got her foot in the door. I told them they have to, you know, have her as their listing agent. And she got it all on her own. She's so amazing, and sold the property within 2 days and sent me a huge referral check just out of nowhere. I did not expect that. And I thought, gosh, this could be quite lucrative. And so we partnered, and we talked about it. We partnered, and we were partners all up until a few months ago, actually, until she's kind of got engaged and is moving kind of her life closer to Steamboat Springs, and it was totally amicable, and we love each other. But now I'm kind of off on my own and running.
Let's talk about the partnership arrangement. You know, a lot of brokers work as teams these days. You know, I've interviewed husband wife teams. I know there's mother son teams or father son teams, and there's partner teams. How does that dynamic work?
Well, I think it's wonderful. I think it gives you balance, and I think it, you know, allows you to collaborate, which I love, and brainstorm and, you know, think about ideas and bounce things off of each other. I really enjoy being part of a partnership and a team. And I think we kind of envisioned that it would last a little bit longer, but we always knew it probably wouldn't last, you know, forever, because she had her life kind of transitioning to Steamboat. But I would totally do it again. I think having a team and a partnership is, you know, it has its pros and cons, of course. You always want to make sure you're both trying to have equal weight in what you're doing. But I got really good advice, actually. I think it was maybe from Ernie Fearwald. He said, you know, this goes for a partnership for business, and it goes for a marriage. You know, if you're keeping tabs on what tasks you're doing, you know, I clean the dishes tonight, or I put the kids to bed, or I brought this client in, you know, it's never going to work. It just won't. You know, you can't keep tabs. You just have to be all in 50-50, and just know that at the end of the day, you're both helping each other. So I think we worked really well in that capacity. It was more just like a personal thing of why we're not teamed up anymore. But I highly recommend it. I think in this business, when you are just in it every moment, to have someone give you that balance is huge.
And so on the back end, are the commissions split 50-50? Is that how a traditional partnership works?
I think, yeah, that's how our partnership worked. And I think each partnership is different. But I think, again, if I had to recommend it, it would 50-50, or it might not work very well, because then you're kind of counting who did what when. So yeah, 50-50, I think, is the best way to do it.
You know, it seems like a lot of brokers are leveraging, you know, somebody that's more seasoned, that's been around, has a big client list, and then maybe bringing in an up and coming broker as a partner to maybe expand how they're marketing, be, you know, younger audience, social media savvy, tech savvy person to sort of understudy and build that partnership. Is that how you would describe your relationship with Dana?
Yes, because Dana has been in this business for 20 plus years. And so she kind of did. She took me in. I feel like there's only a couple ways to get into this business. You know, you're kind of either someone's assistant, you start with rentals, or join someone's team or as a partner. And I'm so grateful to this day that Dana kind of took me in under her wing and taught me, and we grew together. And I really think we both brought amazing different strengths to the table, which allowed us to have a huge year in 2020. I totally think that is the case. Yes. And I think I brought some interesting marketing things to the table as well. Yes.
So now you're on your own. Congrats.
Thank you.
A big step.
It is.
So how would you define your niche in the Aspen Snowmass market?
I think for whatever reason, I've been attracting kind of three separate groups of people. One are young families from LA and New York. I don't know why, maybe because I have young kids. And then the other is kind of this up and coming developers coming into Aspen or have been in Aspen or want to get their foot in the door in development projects, because I feel like I have some background in that. And then the third is kind of this older clientele who have been here for a really long time and are ready for that next step, whether that's transitioning down valley or whether that's moving out of altitude for health reasons or whatever that is. And I really enjoy actually all three of those segments, but I love helping kind of these, you know, old school Aspen locals that have been here for a long time, just kind of help with their next step.
Let's unpack the developer comment a little bit, you know, just to give us some clarity on that. So you're saying you're getting these young families coming in from New York and LA, and they're interested in developing a property?
No. So the young families are definitely end users. They don't want necessarily to build. They want ready, move-in, turnkey product. That's properties that are beautiful and, you know, ready to move into. And then I have this other kind of group that is, whether they've been living here for a while and are now kind of just getting their feet wet, or whether they've kind of just jumped in, that actually are interested in development properties, that actually want to buy, build, and flip properties. So, and I feel like I have background in that because my husband and our family and I have been building a house for the last several years. It's taken us quite a long time, but it's taught me a lot. So I feel like I can add value there.
No, that makes total sense. It's something, another theme I've heard in the show is, you know, just having that background in building or development or construction, you know, it gives you a lot of background to guide your clients through that process as well. So you said your husband and you are currently building a home in Aspen. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So we've been living right across from Coke Park, that volleyball park in town, for gosh, almost 14 years now. And we have walked up and down Midland Trail, which is kind of the trail right at the base of Shadow Mountain for 14 years with our dog, throwing tennis balls, just walking up and down. And one day we saw Craig Morris had a sign out on this vacant lot, and we called. Long story short, ended up really being persistent in trying to buy this kind of sliver of land. They were trying to sell it as a compound, one big lot and then kind of a caretaker's lot. And we just really tried our hardest to get this kind of sliver caretaker's lot. And we ended up buying it 5 years ago now. And because it's a piece of land in Aspen that's never been developed before, and because it's in the county, it's the city of Aspen is on one side of the trail and the county is on the other, Pickens County's on the other, we've just had to really dig in deep with both the county and the city to even get to the point of where we are now, which is framed in. So it's just taken a lot.
Wow. No, I've been through this process with the county. It's no fun. Yes. You know, I mean, there's bureaucracy for bureaucracy, right? To make sure that everything being built is great and structural and safe and all that. But then there's sort of this mountain town bureaucracy that, in my opinion, goes a little far sometimes in terms of the rigorousness and the expense of building here. And it's partially why you see these stratospheric price points. Is that your assessment of this, or, you know, have you had a good experience?
No, that's absolutely my assessment. I mean, I'm not saying we haven't had a bad experience. It's just time is money, and it's a long, arduous process. There's no doubt. I mean, we're so grateful. We're so excited. We're so just over the moon that we're able to do this. It's just, it's a crazy process for sure.
So taking those lessons, if you had a client come to you and said, "Hey, I'm thinking about buying this lot in Aspen. I want to build. What do you think? What's a lesson learned from your experience that you would pass along to that client?"
Well, I think budget, you know, price per square foot is always more than people think. It's always going to take more time than people think. Get a really, really, really good architect who knows what they're doing. Get a good land planner. And that would be my advice.
Okay, moving along. You know, I know you've done a lot in your marketing communications focusing on women who care, is I believe how you assessed it. You know, why have you focused on that? And tell us a little bit about your initiative there.
Yeah. So for whatever reason, I've in the newsletters that we started sending out 2 years ago, we thought it'd be a really interesting idea to focus on women entrepreneurs in the Valley. Just to support each other, it kind of gives a local inside scoop of what's happening. I know a lot of women, I know a lot of moms, I know a lot of moms with young children, and I know the balance it takes to work and be a mother. And so I thought it would be a really great way to, like I said, introduce our, you know, database to inside things that are going on in Aspen, but also support local women who are working really hard to build businesses here. And long term, my goal is to create kind of a more of a formal group of, you know, future female entrepreneurs, where maybe we're helping high school students and high school girls figure out what they want to do, or maybe we're just getting together once a month and networking and supporting each other. That's kind of the long-term goal, but it just kind of organically came about, and I love it. I love meeting these women. I love interviewing them. I love finding out what they're doing, what they're bringing to this community, how they're balancing it all. It's just, it's meaningful.
If you looked at that group of women that you've highlighted through the years on a pie chart, you know, are the majority of them brokers, or are they in other, on all kinds of
fields?
No,
none of them are brokers, actually. a lot of them are photographers, restaurant owners, jewelry shop owners, therapists, nonprofit, you know, directors. You know, one woman owns and started her own travel company, Jet Set. I'm trying to think who else. Yoga studios, pretty much all across the board. Artists. Yeah. Anyone who's really just making our community better, I feel, is kind of where I've focused on.
Have you used examples of women's groups in other mountain towns or areas as kind of your guidepost for this effort?
No, I haven't. I mean, one of my best friends who I grew up with since childhood, who also lives here, Emily Farrell and I and Robin Van Domlin started a group, gosh, 10 years ago called 100 Plus Women Who Care. That was where that came from. And that was a different organization that has since no longer exists. So we've always kind of had in the back of our heads, well, how can we continue something like that, give back to the community and involve women, you know? I mean, it's just something we've always been passionate about. So it's kind of piggybacked onto that concept, I guess.
It would be interesting to look around at other mountain towns and see if there's other, you know, kind of groups like that.
It really would be. It would be. It's a great idea. I want to do that.
Maybe if there's listeners out there that know of a group like that in a different mountain town, they can let us know. And we'll, I think that's a great forum and it's a great subject. Because there are, like you said, there's so many women-owned businesses in these towns that are, they're leading this great group of businesses and doing really cool, innovative things, but maybe not getting the recognition they deserve.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, the elephant in the room is, you know, the brokers in the real estate community, a lot of female brokers, obviously. But in terms of ownership of the brokerages, it's very limited to mostly men. Is there a reason why, you think?
It's a good question. It's funny you ask. I think the first conversation or phone call I ever had with Craig Morris, I think I said that to him. I said, you know, I want to be a partner because there's no women in Sotheby's as partners. And I'm just innately competitive. And maybe that's not a reason to want to be a partner just because there's no women, but it's just something I happened to say to him. And I think they all the partners agree. They want more women. They are so open to it. And I think it's just, I don't think there's a reason why. I think it's just something that's naturally happened. I think that will shift and change ultimately, for sure. I already know a couple other women that have talked about ownership and partnership. I don't know. I think maybe traditionally the role of a mother is to, you know, stay home, but that's obviously changed over the years. So yeah, I don't know. I think it will shift for sure.
Let's talk a little bit about you being a working mom. That is a really hard thing, right? And like you said, you know, sometimes women can get pushed out, you know, not pushed out, but like they'll be out of the workforce for a while as they're in, you know, the children are very young in the child rearing years, depending on what their spouse or partner does. And so, you know, I know you have three young children. That's a handful. Congrats to you and your husband.
Thank you.
It's a lot. But how, you know, how do you balance, you know, being a full-time broker and a full-time mom?
You know, I always say, I joke around, but I'm actually not joking when I say, if you want something done, give it to a busy person. And I think it's true. It's like, if you, when you're just in your zone and you can just do it all. I don't know. I feel like, I guess I'm just one of those type A, organized, get it done, ambitious, driven people. So I just try to figure it out. Now, certainly there are days when I feel guilty and I'm not being a good mom, and or I feel guilty I'm not putting enough work in. So I think a lot of moms have that. I know a lot of moms have that. I've talked to them about it. It's just one of those things. You want to be a mom. You want to be the best mom you can be. You want, yeah, I think it's one of the most important jobs in the world is to raise children. And I think, but you also, a lot of women have this kind of desire to do something for them, for themselves and for their brain and for their confidence and for just them, you know, and contribute to their families. And so I think it's just, it's a balance. It's a very, very skilled art of balance, I think, which I don't know if anyone does it well, but we all try.
And to some degree, being a broker allows you a lot of flexibility, right? I mean, you can certainly make your own schedule. Does that help?
Yes, 100%. There's no career I would choose that would not have flexibility. There's no question about it.
This episode is brought to you by Aspen Snowmass Sotheby's International Realty, the premier brokerage in Aspen and the Roaring Fork Valley. As the largest local real estate brokerage, we are a powerhouse firm with international reach and over 180 hand-picked brokers who are local experts, deeply vested in our community and our clients. We continue to set the bar in market knowledge, sales volume, and satisfied clients, and have helped our clients buy and sell more homes than any other real estate company in Aspen and the Roaring Fork Valley for more than 20 years. Our year-to-date sales are greater than the next four companies combined. For us, it's not just business, it's personal, because we're convinced there's no better place to live than right here, right now. Learn more by visiting us at www.aspensnowmasssir.com.
So you said you and Dana had a really strong 2020. And, you know, obviously the mountain communities in general and Aspen in particular had record-breaking years, kind of fueled by the pandemic. How did it go for you?
It went really well. We were both so happy and grateful and humbled by all of it. I felt like we kept a really positive approach and attitude within our partnership, within our marketing. As much as the world was falling apart and it was hard for everybody, I think we just did our best. We felt really grateful. We sold, you know, a little over $65 million worth of real estate for us was huge. And it was really exciting. We had amazing clients. You know, that was a really big part of it for us. We had kind, good people who are our clients, and it makes your job easy for sure. I mean, not easy, but easier.
Yeah. I mean, you probably have some horror stories of not cutting clients as well that you could share. Or maybe you wouldn't want to share on the air, but do you have any crazy stories from last year that you want to share?
Yeah, I think Bill Guth, who I love, he and Lisa's wife are great. And Bill Guth always reminds me, he's like, Mandy, you know that it's so crazy. We sold a property in the West End, 124 West Hallam. It was not listed at the time. And I called Bill and I said, I have clients who want to buy it. And they just left town. And we FaceTimed, we videoed, and we ended up selling it for $22.9 million, you know, roughly. And they hadn't seen it. And they hadn't seen it in person. And so Bill's always says, you know, you need to tell people that. Like, you sold almost a $23 million house sight unseen. And I'm like, yeah, I guess you're right. I never really thought about that. So that was kind of interesting.
How much was that influenced by the pandemic and just being unable to show it, right?
100%, 100%. Okay.
Right. I mean, there was that time when you couldn't do showings really.
And no.
You couldn't be in a car with a client and exactly. All that. And then, so people really, sounds like that, people.
I think a lot of people had that experience, but it's still interesting to think about, you know?
No, absolutely. I've heard that story several times in the course of the show. And that's a big one though. Almost $23 million property sight unseen is an impressive sale.
Well, I'm happy for them. They're very happy. So I'm happy for them.
So shifting into 2021, we're through the first quarter. How are things going so far?
Things are going well. I think it's totally different for me being on my own. But what I have found in the last month or two is that I'm really involved with a handful of off-market properties where I'm representing the seller and the buyer. And that's been interesting because there's no inventory. So it's really competitive. I went to my husband actually had some clients that he said they're thinking about selling. They want to meet with you. So I went over to meet with them and we spoke the first time and, I gave them kind of my presentation and then I left thinking, gosh, this is going to be competitive because there's only so many properties like this left at this price point. So I went back to them. I actually called one of my buyers and I said, I have this property. He said, write up the offer. So I called them back a day later and I said, I have an offer for you. I know you haven't decided to list with me. I know you haven't decided to list at all, but I'd like to present you an offer. And so I went back there and I could see on their coffee table that they had all these different brokerages that they had been meeting with. So I knew that they had met with a lot of people. So I brought them the offer and, we went back and forth. They signed and under contract. So that was fascinating and interesting and exciting all in once. So I find the market is just, there's definitely the off-market opportunities and properties are what's fueling, I think, a lot of the actual properties going under contract because there's just no inventory. Obviously, everyone has said that. So
I'm just curious, why would a seller decide not to put it on the MLS and sort of auction, and just get the best price, based on multiple offers, if you will?
Yeah, I think there's multiple reasons. I think sometimes it can be personal for privacy reasons, depending on who that person is or what their lifestyle is. I think it can be just testing out the waters. They just want to see if a broker tells them, look, I have buyers or I know people. Let's just see what we can get before we list it and have to go through the showings and the kind of invasiveness of people coming into your home. So I think those are kind of the two biggest reasons.
So how do you go about digging and finding those unlisted properties in the area?
It's funny. Dana always jokes with me about this because I literally will just call people or knock on their door and not in a weird way, but just, my husband grew up here. He was born and raised here. So I just feel like we know a lot of people who've been here for a long time. So I'll somehow, some way find someone's contact and just reach out to them and just say in a very non-aggressive way, would you ever be interested in selling in this market?
Now, this is the year of digging for sure, right? And we're hearing about more pocket listings and, things getting transacted off the MLS. And I think to your point, somebody does a pocket listing, they might get some feedback on, the property itself, the price point, maybe, get feedback that could help them if it does go onto the MLS and they're going to have showings. Has that been your experience?
Definitely. Yes, for sure. Yeah, that's another huge reason. I think that's a good point to get feedback.
So if you're a seller and you're contemplating selling your home, why should you, if you do a pocket listing, what kind of feedback are you going to get during that process that will benefit you if you go into the MLS?
Well, I think like you just said, price, what people's issues are with your home, what they like, what they don't like. But I think in this market, it's interesting because if you have a pocket listing, and you get a handful of people that come in and you don't get any offers. If it's a good home, if it's a good property, and there's so much demand right now, I think it'd be silly not to list it because, you know, a lot of the pocket listings I know that kind of started off as a pocket listing and then went on the market, they sell because they just have that much more, you know, that much bigger of a group that knows about it.
So what would you say clients are looking for right now? What are they, I mean, besides a reasonable price point, which is maybe going to be hard to come by in the next 6 months. But, you know, generally, what are they looking for? What do they want in a mountain home these days?
I think each client is very different. I just, speaking of off-market properties, I had a client of mine who bought in the West End and they wanted to see if they could buy the lot next door. So I called the person who had already bought it this past summer and I said, would you ever consider selling? And they said, look, we don't ski. We're not really big mountain people. We don't care about views. We just want to be two blocks walking to downtown to a restaurant and we want to be close to the Rio Grande Trail, which I had not really heard before. You know, most people are like, I want a view or I want, you know, new architecture, new build. I want sun, you know, privacy. It's like, it was interesting to hear. I think everyone is so different right now in what they want.
That is fascinating. You know, there's a lot of people in these towns that are moving here for a variety of reasons and skiing and snowboarding might not be the first reason that they're moving here.
You're right. Yeah. It's just more about the community or walkability or safety. I mean, there's all these reasons. You're right.
All right. I always have a section in the show where I like to get into sort of the tools of the trade of the person I'm talking to. And, you know, I start out that line of questioning with, you know, where do your business leads come from predominantly?
I think predominantly they come from referrals from previous clients, as well as just people who kind of, you know you, love you, trust you. And then some of the leads have also come from just sales in that neighborhood. So if you send out a just sold postcard or if you say, you know, if people know that you just sold something in their neighborhood, they'll reach out as well.
So do you do a lot of proactive, like direct mail in certain targeted neighborhoods?
Only if there's a sale. That's kind of the only time. We did do last summer a direct mail piece that kind of just talked about Dana and I and what we do and kind of who we are. But we didn't find that was as successful as just kind of after we have a sale, we send out a direct mail piece.
Okay, so I own a home in a neighborhood where you know, neighbor of a home you just sold. I get a postcard in the mail, and I'm thinking to myself, maybe I'm ready to sell. This is a great price point that my neighbor got. I think my house is well positioned. I'm going to give Mandy a call. What does that process look like?
Yeah, so they call and they say, I just saw that you sold this property, and I'm considering selling. Do you have, you know, can you tell me a little bit about what you think about my house? Or, and a lot of times it's more of a just very personal phone call of kind of just questions about their life and why, what they're thinking, why they're thinking about moving, what's happening in their lives. I mean, really just asking them a bunch of questions and listening to where they are. And then from there, kind of figuring out the best route to take.
Do you find that sellers are shopping multiple brokers?
Oh yes, 100%.
And so how do you win that client?
That's a good question. I don't really know. Sometimes I think, you know, because typically I find it's people that work with you are really the ones that kind of are referred by, you know, by friends or family or that know you, like I said, know you, love you, and trust you. So I think when you get kind of the random phone call, it's just a connection thing. If you connect with them, you know, emotionally or mentally or whatever, if they've seen what you've done, or if they, like I said, these conversations aren't really talking about like what I've done. It's more about just asking them questions. So maybe that's helpful. I don't know.
Okay. So they get this emotional bond. They think you're
like, they feel like they're right? Heard. They feel like they're heard. They're not like getting pitched to, they feel like they're actually being heard, you know?
No, that makes sense and is great advice for other brokers out there. And so let's say they choose you to be their listing broker. What do they expect from you at that point?
So then they expect really good photography, really good marketing, a conversation about price point. You know, a lot of sellers right now are kind of have their own price in their heads and they're driving the price. All we can do as brokers is give them our opinion and the knowledge about the market and the knowledge about, you know, comparable or similar properties. You know, that's kind of everything in our control. And then the seller tells us what they want to list it for. And we, you know, take, you know, really good photography, you know, really good copywriting, market, website, Instagram, media, use all of Sotheby's marketing tools and just get as much exposure as possible.
Of all those tactics you listed, is there one that you think is the most notable right now?
I mean, I'm sure this is odd to say, but I really do think the MLS, I mean, there's so many brokers who have so many buyers right now, just getting it out there in front of those people, I think is the most beneficial. Obviously Zillow, but that's kind of out of our control as well. I don't know so much if Instagram and our own personal websites and our newsletters, I don't know if those are so much of, you know, getting crazy exposure for the listings so much as just validating who we are as professionals. You know, I mean, I think it's almost like a business card to have those things.
That makes sense. And you and I were talking offline about you worked with an agency to develop your personal brand and your website. And so you made a pretty big investment there. Is that why you thought that was important, just to, you know, to have a, like you said, a online business card?
Yeah, I think first impressions are everything. And so I think if someone happens to tell someone my name or refer me or just randomly stumble upon me somehow, I think a first impression of a cohesive look and feel and tone and messaging is important. I think it shows you're professional. I think it shows you're an expert. I think it shows you have experience and personability. I mean, all those things. I think it's just, there's a very delicate way of putting all those things together. And I think a lot of brokers, to no one's fault, I mean, I can understand this, and not that I'm doing it any better or differently, but I think a lot of the things are the same. And so I really think standing out and differentiating yourself is important. And I think there's different ways to do that. It's hard. It's really hard.
I absolutely concur. Like you said, there, you know, there's 700-ish brokers in this community, and, you know, to stand out amongst them, especially when you're, you know, you're not a Craig Morris, or as we've talked about, or somebody that's, you know, tried and true and multiple hundreds of millions a year, year in, year out. So if you're an up and coming broker, I can't emphasize that enough, right? In order to differentiate yourself, put great marketing out there and make sure people, you know, you're networking and growing your personal brand. And it looks like you're checking all those boxes.
Oh, well, thank you. I wasn't on Instagram before 2 years ago, and then I was forced to join. So I'm no expert. In fact, I'm actually hiring as to help me is a longtime local, Olivia, or Liv, I call her, Liv Van Domwen. And she just, I can't wait to start working with her to help me as an assistant, because she just knows all these crazy things. And I feel like I'm really old. I don't know. I don't know any of them.
No, it's great. You got to have good people. One of the things that you mentioned, I'd love to just talk about for a second, is Zillow. You know, that's not something that hasn't come up a lot in the conversations on the show, but I know it's, I've talked about it a lot offline with various brokers, and it's obviously the main tool that a lot of people are using to kind of do their quick homework and research about an area as they're driving around. And can you explain that relationship with the brokers and Zillow and how that works?
Yeah, I have found, I mean, I can just explain personally how I feel about it. I can think of one buyer in particular who was here this last summer who, you know, I would go over to meet them, to pick them up, to go look at properties. And he had his Zillow app constantly up. And I just thought, great. I mean, you know, of course I want to find you properties that you're not finding, but in today's world, it's merely impossible unless it's completely off market. I mean, if he wants to send me properties that he's finding through Zillow and finding, and he's educating himself on the neighborhoods through Zillow, I mean, that's just is beneficial for all of us, because then I can kind of give him my inside scoop or inside knowledge of what I think about what he's finding. But at least it's letting me know what he likes and what he's attracted to and what's appealing to him, versus me having to just send him tons of properties to get to that point. So I think Zillow's, I'm kind of indifferent to it, to be honest, which is a weird answer, but I think it's a tool that's out there for buyers. They're going to be using it, and why not look at the bright side of it as a broker?
How accurate would you say it is? Are you able to uncover properties that aren't listed as for sale on Zillow?
No, absolutely not. And they have like their Zestimate, which I don't know. I don't think that is accurate in our market by any means. Maybe at one point it was. I don't think it is right now. But no, you're not able to find off market. I mean, you can literally only find things that are listed on the MLS on Zillow.
Right. But yeah, so if I'm cruising around town with Zillow app opened on my own, and am I missing out on properties that are listed that just aren't showing up on the platform?
No, if they're listed, you're fine. You can see it on Zillow.
Okay. So those pocket listings, though, is really where the opportunity might lie, to, and they don't ever appear on Zillow.
Yes, exactly.
And do you, as a broker, or do you know of brokers that do advertising on Zillow to, you know, to get your name out there through the platform?
You know, I don't know anyone personally who does that in this valley. I'm sure there are brokers that do it. I'm not knowledgeable about it, to be honest. I've never had a desire or interest to do it, and I don't know if it's beneficial or successful. I really don't.
Are there any other tools that listeners should be aware of as a broker, you know, to get, you know, other than a Zillow, or, you know, leveraging their brokerage and doing kind of those traditional tactics, great website, social media, taking advantage of those opportunities your brokerage offers? Are there other things that they should be thinking about?
I just think the most important thing is to constantly be getting in front of your database and your people and the people who know you and want to work with you, or even people who you know but you don't know, maybe in 5 years they want to work with you. But just to be constantly getting in front of those people, whether that's through a monthly, you know, fun newsletter, or whether that's through phone calls or notes like thank you cards or whatever it is, I just think that's just keeping you top of mind. You know, I think everyone knows so many brokers, and so to just stay top of mind, I think, is really important.
Do you have a tool you use for database and email that you're fond of?
Yeah, just a monthly newsletter sends out every month, no matter what, no matter if you think you have content or don't, you just send out, you know, and I kind of take a different approach to this, which is, I don't even know really how to explain it. I guess you could call it more fluff and more, I mean, I put some market data and research in there, but it's all about Aspen and like what's happening here. But it also brings in some things about design trends and architecture trends and just anything that I find interesting. I put in the newsletter once a month and then send it out, and just send it out to our database, and just to keep top of mind.
Yeah, no, that's a great tactic. Email is a tried and true tactic from all marketers. Probably one of the best returns on investment you can make. And I've read a couple of your email newsletters, and they're great.
Thank you.
And I think, like you said, putting that kind of personal touch on them and not just delivering a bunch of market trends, which, you know, is great and is important, but having that personal connection and style and design and those types of aesthetics, I think, can really help that communication.
And a lot of people would rather prefer more data, I'm sure. You know, it's like each person is so different, but you just got to be true to what I think is interesting. So that's kind of what I send out.
Nice. So do you have any listings in the pipeline right now that you're excited about?
Well, we have one listing, 198 Eastwood, which is up Knollwood, which I think is a great opportunity, great price point for someone to get in either as a development project or live in as is, and, you know, down the line, change it if they want. I think it's a great property. And yeah, that's it.
So you said earlier in the show that you've got a lot of clients coming in, young families. It makes sense, right? You have a young family as well. You can really bond with those clients. And I think that's important. You said a lot of them are coming from LA and New York, you know, two big markets for, you know, mountain towns in general, and here in Aspen in particular. What type of businesses do they typically represent?
Finance. Period.
Period.
Literally. that's pretty much all of them.
Now, are they looking at this? Is this one of their second or third homes, or is this their, you know, their preferred place to be and ski? Or are they moving here full time?
I would say 99% of them are buying now as a second home with a goal of living here full time in the next 3 to 5 years.
And is that fueled by the pandemic or just a lifestyle shift? Or
I think it's both. I think it's the pandemic. I think it's a lifestyle shift. I think it's a lot of it could be social too. I mean, a lot of people know each other who are doing this and want to be here, you know, because they heard their friend or they heard that it's a great lifestyle, you know, word of mouth. I think it's, yeah, I think it is. I think it's lifestyle and being able to work remotely and being able to live in a safe community where you can raise kids camping, fishing, hiking, biking, skiing, and still have really good schools and still, you know, have culture and restaurants and, you know, proximity to everything. I think all of that. I think all of it. I think it's very rare to have all of that in one place.
Do you find that any of your client, potential clients, are they considering other mountain towns, or are they just dead set on Aspen?
Pretty much dead set on Aspen. A couple of them have been looking at Telluride or Aspen, but pretty much they want to be in Aspen. And a lot of them have ties to Aspen, you know, like historically they've come here with their families and they now kind of have made that decision. They want to be here full time.
What other, do they have any other places that they own homes that are trending?
A few of the clients from LA have houses in Nantucket or the Hamptons. But pretty much, yeah, LA people are mostly Aspen. So they, yeah, not a ton of them actually. It seems like this is like their second home. And that, in that point in their life, this is kind of their second home choice. And then ultimately they want to be here full time.
That makes sense. You know, with the price points is the way they are right now, you know, is it tough to set realistic expectations when a client comes to town to take a look at property?
Yes, 100%. It is tough. It's almost like a learning curve. You know, if someone's not totally familiar with what the price points are right now, you hate to be the bearer of bad news, but it's the reality for properties at this moment. And I think once buyers realize what they're getting into, they're either like all in, they want to get their foot in, or they're like, we're going to step back here and wait a second.
So maybe you have somebody come in and say, like in their mind, like they're ready to spend 5 to 10 million and think that's a good budget, you know, which it is. And 99% of the market's out there,
yes.
Right? But as we know, and as we've talked about in the show, you know, the market has really moved up to 15 to 20 million, you know, for a good size, you know, a decent home here in Aspen proper. Obviously you can shift people to, you know, Snowmass or Down Valley if they're more price point oriented, but it is pretty shocking.
It's shocking. It's literally shocking.
So how do you deal with, you know, as a local and, you know, with friends and family and stuff that live here, and that affordability question, right? And, you know, obviously Aspen's got an affordable housing program, but, you know, if you have somebody that's trying to make the move here or wants to be here full time, you know, can they get into the market, or is it just too hard to get in now?
There's definitely clients I've had in the last 6 months to a year that they just can't get into the market. It's just too much, you know, and it's crazy, really. I mean, there's just no other place like it. I mean, I talk about it with my family. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, and we always joke around like, well, I could probably buy Cleveland with the price that I'm paying for a house here. It's just not normal. It's not, you know, we all know that. It's just not reality. And I think that, but we all live here as locals because we live here for the same reasons that everyone's wanting to move here, right? I mean, we all want to raise our families in a safe, beautiful environment. And yeah, it's tough. It's tough. It's like, it's a huge dichotomy for sure.
So those clients, those people that are just like, yeah, I'm out, pulling the plug, can't do it. Totally understandable. Are they they won't consider Down Valley, or will they look at other mountain towns that maybe aren't quite the same premium price point, or are they just going to pause?
No, I think you're right. I think they'll look at other mountain towns. I think they will look at Down Valley for sure, but even Down Valley prices are so high compared to other towns. Or they'll just pause, exactly. They'll just say, let's just pause for a year or two and see what happens in our life.
Is there a property you've had the opportunity to see or list that just completely blew you away?
I think 124 West Hallam was pretty spectacular. That's the one that was Bill Goose. It's just so beautiful, beautifully done, and the finishes and the just everything about it. It's one of my favorites for sure. I mean, just so well done. Totally my style. Everything about it is just quintessentially perfect. I love it.
That is fun when you see a house, or you tour a house, or you see photos, that it just really is spot on your personal style. I think that makes all the difference, right? In terms of the appeal of it to you as your dream home potentially.
Yes. Yes, it really does. And I'm so happy because our clients are happy there. So that's what makes it even, feel good that they're so happy and we found it for them off market. So it's makes you feel good.
I always like to shift the show at the end here to a couple kind of few favorites. What is your personal recreational pursuit these days?
Well, typically it would be hiking, mountain biking, all the regular ones. But I've really, in the last couple of years, gotten into coaching soccer. And I love it. I love it so much. I played soccer my whole life, and I haven't played in many years. And just getting back into that and seeing how much kids love it and just encouraging kids. And I don't know, it feels very natural to me. And it's bringing me a lot of joy. So I love it.
Nice. With the off season just about here, a lot of people heading out to the desert. Do you have a spot where you and your family love to go?
Well, my husband's an accountant, and so we don't take a spring break ever on a normal spring break time. So we actually, every year for the last 10 years, go to Laguna Beach in California after April 15th. So that's where we're headed.
That's a great spot. It'll be a really nice time of year to be there too, I'm sure.
Yes, I'm excited.
If you have an important client come to town and you're going to entertain them, do you have a spot or a place you'd like to go?
I really love Bear Den. I love, we know Bridger who owns it. And then, I don't know, I just think it's charming, good food, good drinks. And then Batula is always good for the really kind of fancy, good dining food. I love Batula.
Is there a charitable cause you get behind?
For a long time, we supported Aspen Junior Hockey because my husband's a hockey player. And now the two big ones that I'm supporting are Wildwood Preschool, which two of my three kids go to, and then AEF, Aspen Education Foundation, I am passionate about as well.
With 21, it sounds like you've had a lot of success in the last year. It's going to be a tougher year this year just with the limited inventory. What's your prediction? How do you think it's going to unfold?
It's a good question. I think it's going to be a busy summer. I really do. I think there are a lot of people still wanting to be here and transition here before a school year per se. I don't know. I feel like it could go one of two ways. I feel like it could just really slow down because there's no inventory, or it could remain steady. I don't think it'll be anything like last year, but it could remain fairly steady if inventory even picks up a little bit. So I don't know. It'll be interesting. Or even just if you're able to dig in and find off-market properties, I think it can remain steady that way as well.
One more question. Is there, if you're somebody's contemplating becoming a mountain broker, what's your advice to them?
I would say, to just really be true to who you are and yourself and your connections in this, in these small communities, be really kind of trustworthy, discreet, confidential. I think those are really important things in this business. And just be yourself, be positive, and kind of put that out there is what I would say.
If listeners want to find out more about you, what's the best way to do that?
Well, they can go to mandywelgos.com or on Instagram, Mandy Welgos. And those are probably the best two places to start.
Mandy, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I hope listeners have gotten a lot out of it in terms of, you know, just, I think there's a lot of lessons here about being true to yourself and trustworthy and standing out and being differentiated amongst all the brokers that are out there. And I really loved your statement and your quote about, you know, if you want to get something done, give it to a busy person. And, you know, a mom with three children defines the word busy. And for you to be balancing being a broker with those duties, I applaud you for keeping all that up in the air. So congrats on all your success.
Well, thank you, Christian. And thank you so much for having me. And I love what you're doing. This is so awesome. So thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Selling the Mountains. You'll never miss an episode if you subscribe or follow the show. If you liked what you heard, please leave a short review and share it with a friend. For more information about Selling the Mountains, including feedback, suggestions, or sponsorship opportunities, please visit sellingthemountains.com and sign up for our newsletter. You can follow the show on Instagram or Facebook at Selling the Mountains. You can follow the host on Twitter at Christian Knapp or on Instagram at Knappstagram. This show was produced in collaboration with Dustin H. James at Podborder. Selling the Mountains is a production of Moment of Truth, LLC, all rights reserved.